stop fondling the head of your mic.
Balls, a supernatural podcast with Lizzie and Missy.
Got my drinky drink.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I have blueberry lemon water.
Oh, you fancy. I am far less fancy.
You want to get started?
Let's do it.
Yas.
So this episode is season 2, episode 4, Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things.
No.
And the tagline is, what's dead should stay dead.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the actual tagline, but...
It is now.
Dean says it enough that I feel like it's so.
Okay, do we want an outline?
Yes. Well, first, this episode first aired October 19th, 2006.
So long ago.
I know, but it's close to Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Close to my birthday.
Mm-hmm. Yes, let's go with a synopsis.
Dean and Sam investigate the murder of a college student who has come back from the dead to seek revenge on those who mistreated her while she was alive.
Ooh! But that sounds like a ghost.
Oh, maybe?
It does, a vengeful spirit.
Maybe, maybe not, I don't know.
So I did laugh because I remembered you mentioning Jared Padalecki actually breaking his hand in the last episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That in this episode when he says, it feels like I broke my hand. I was like, oh, that's so forced. I love it.
It was kind of though, wasn't it? Like in the end, it was kind of like, oh man, I think she really broke my hand.
Yeah, like he's kind of like, knowing obviously what happened and knowing that they had to write it in there, he's like, oh, I guess I broke my hand. Should probably just... And then what's worse is at some point, like, he moves it completely. I don't know. Have you ever broken, like, a wrist?
I have not, but I feel like... I broke my arm, but not, like, my wrist.
So I've broken my wrist. I've broken both wrists.
Oh, my God.
Not at the same time.
Well, I hope not.
I did have a friend in high school, though, who did have a bike accident, like, an actual, like, cyclist, into a fence. And he actually broke both of his wrists.
Ow.
At the same time, because obviously he caught his weight on both his hands. But I did re-break my wrist because I jumped a fence before it healed properly. But the first time you do it, you go through and, like, they do the pressure tests. And then they make you kind of, like, roll your wrist. And if you break your wrist, that shit hurts.
I can only imagine, yeah.
There's a part of the episode after he says, I think she broke my wrist, where, like, he does some hand motion with both of his hands to Dean, and I'm like, but did you?
So you're calling bullshit, and you're like, I don't think you could do that with a broken wrist.
Yeah, I'm like, bruh.
Oh, man.
Listen to us, or follow us on Twitter, which I thought was great. About people are talking to us
in this town.
Sorry, that's my text tone. I should silence my phone. Let me do that.
Yeah, I
like an appropriate human being.
Well, I posted on Twitter to everyone in our SPN family that we were gonna watch this episode, and I just wanted to know what they felt like, what they thought about it, what their take was on the episode, and we got some pretty good responses.
Yeah, should we read some?
Yeah, do you want to read one?
Okay. So I'll start with at Brittany Shea 28.
Okay.
Who said, this episode really got me. Dean pushes everything deep down until it all comes exploding up. I think Dean sees himself as a protector, which we know is definitely true.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Especially in the past episodes with the flashbacks. And doesn't want Sam to worry about him. He puts on a brave face, but we often see it come out in anger towards others. That's true. I feel really bad for Sam. He truly thinks a lot of his brother. We do learn how much Dean carries on his shoulders and how guilty he feels for being alive. We also see how Dean doesn't realize he has someone to take care of him. He thinks he should do it himself because that's all he's ever known.
Yeah.
And I definitely see that. And it's that whole, if you don't talk about it, it's going to come out in different ways. And with Dean, all he's ever known is, like, his father's anger towards the demon and everything. So, like, definitely he's going to come out super angry and swinging.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. And Jessica at KY Irish Princess. So she said something similar along those lines. But she starts off, "First, I always have to chuckle when Dean says, 'What's dead should stay dead.' Because as time goes on, that's definitely not a rule he follows himself." And she just finds it ironic.
I mean, it's true. And I think that's something we saw in the previous episode, too, when we were talking about bloodlust. In that Dean saw all vampires as monsters and wanted to just basically kill them all. And obviously, something kind of changes in Dean in a later episode with Sam.
Right.
So again, we have another ironic episode where something Dean consistently says and believes, he kind of reverts on. So, all this foreshadowing without knowing it.
Well, I mean, even from when he, when he had his heart, when the,
oh, when he first got electrocuted.
Yeah.
And he was supposed to die in.
Yeah. So you think he kind of sits there and is like, well, you know, I was kind of dead a little bit there, and...
Well, and I think also after having that brush with the Reaper.
Yeah.
When he finally kind of came to the realization, like, this was it for him, and he kind of accepted death and was prepared for it, and then finds out that his father sacrificed himself and the cult to bring him back.
Yeah.
I think that's something he holds against his father, and in this, that's the thing. Like, he's talking about himself when he says what's dead should stay dead, because in essence, he should have died at least twice.
So far.
So far! He hasn't died yet.
We're only in season two.
I'm gonna get a whiteboard and just track every character with how many times they die, because, true.
We really should do that. Okay, but then Jessica goes on to say, getting serious, besides just being a Monster of the Week episode, we get insight into how both the boys are dealing with their father's recent death. While Sam is more open to his emotions, Dean bottles everything up, trying to put on a macho facade until everything builds up and comes pouring out at the end of the episode. We learn just how much guilt Dean is carrying around and see just how deep-seated his belief is that everything that bad happens in their life is somehow Dean's responsibility. But that another nice thing that Jessica did is she actually went and rewatched the episode just so she could talk about it with us.
Sometimes that's what you need to do, because, I mean, I know that... Okay, so when I first thought about this, I actually will fully admit, I was mistaken on this episode.
Okay.
I thought it was the other zombie episode.
And here I'm sitting here thinking, going, what other zombie episode was?
Let me see if I can find out the actual name of it. But it's the episode where everyone kind of starts coming back to life, including, Bobby's
wife. When his wife comes back? Okay, yeah.
Even zombies you will love will eat you in the end on Super Bros. Is it Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid? Which, when I first started, I was like, wow, do we... Yes, people in Bobby's town are coming back from the dead. Season 5. But what kills me is the fact that, this is what, that's when we meet Jody in.
Oh, really?
Sheriff Jody, because that's when her son comes back.
Oh my god, I didn't even remember that.
Mm-hmm. So actually, this came out, it is season 5, episode 15, came out March 25th, 2010, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. That's the one I thought this one was. And in my mind, I'm like, wow, we meet Jody in season 2?
Yeah.
And then I started watching this, and I was like, I am so wrong.
When I read the title, I didn't remember what episode it was either. But then when I started, like, as soon as it started, I was like, oh, okay. I remember which one it is. I'm not good with the names of the shows. And you can't really tell, I mean, from the title what they're actually going to be about.
No, I mean, like, here, Dead Men Don't Want Plow. I'm not thinking a zombie. Which, at the same time, I went hard on the zombies. So I'm going to have fun with that one.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes time. But I got, like, 3 seasons before then, so we golden.
I wanted to talk about something big that kind of happened in this episode. Is that, they go and visit Mom's grave.
Yes.
That they've never been to. And then Sam has John's dog tags, and he buries them with his mom. He's like, Dad wouldn't want you to have these. But then Dean's like, doesn't want anything to do with it at all.
Well, the other thing, so I had a couple questions when we came to visiting Mama Winchester, Mama Mary's grave.
Mama Mary.
We visit Mama Mary's grave, which is a really nice and well-kept headstone.
Do you think John was paying somebody to do that?
Well, here's the thing. I don't think, from what it sounded like, it didn't sound like John actually had anything to do with it. They mentioned uncle, which is the only time we ever hear about the uncle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also curious as to, and maybe I just didn't pay attention to, like, backstories, and I probably should. Maybe when they go back to Mary, I'll dig deeper. But, so they're obviously visiting, that's how they find out, is they visit Mom's grave, they find Angela's grave.
Mm-hmm.
With the big dead circle of plants and flowers.
Right.
Which is curious to me, because obviously anything within a radius dies of near a zombie. But for it to be in a full circle was interesting.
It was a perfect circle.
So I wonder if there's just, like, literally a circular radius around the zombie that as soon as it enters, that things just die.
Like, keep your 6 foot distance right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's like your 6 foot circle?
That's exactly what it is. It's 6 feet. It's social distancing.
There you go. Zombie social distancing.
Zombie social distancing.
Okay.
So what I questioned was, one, why is this the only time we hear about the uncle? Because even in the flashbacks, we don't really see the uncle.
No.
It's just Mary and her dad.
Yeah.
So Dean finds this grave while Sam is obviously burying dad's dog tags. I was just curious as to why Mary was buried in Greenville, Illinois.
Huh.
Since she died in Lawrence, Kansas.
Yeah. Well, where was she originally from?
And that's what I don't...
Was she from Lawrence, or...?
That's what I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
Exactly. Let's see. Birth. Town. Birth
Mama
town.
Mary.
Mama Mary. She was born December 5th. I don't know if we ever actually find out where she was born. The Campbells. Let's see if I can find some information on the Campbells. Now, it doesn't really say about that, so I don't see what the title is. I mean, I guess we can assume that the Campbells are from Greenville, Illinois.
Yeah, I'm not finding anything either.
But, obviously, Mary and John met in Lawrence.
Yeah.
Samuel Campbell had to up and move the family to Lawrence at some point.
Up and move it.
Up and move the family to Lawrence. So those are my two questions. Was one, just like, what are the odds that this uncle we only hear of once put her gravestone, like, unless her uncle was like, I live in Greenville, Illinois, which in that case, why didn't they visit the uncle? But,
yeah,
can of worms.
I feel like they're not too in tune with that side of the family.
I feel like there were some plot holes that were never fully answered, but they kind of just, like, pushed it aside because it wasn't too deep into the plot for it, such as the uncle. Why Mary was buried in Greenville, Illinois.
Yeah.
So Dean finds this and just hops hard onto the fact that this is a hunt. Because what's weirder than, like, a circle of dead things?
And Sam's not really on the bandwagon of it.
No, because he's skeptical of it.
But, I mean, you have to kind of think that that's a little odd that that's happening.
Oh, yeah.
That there's just this perfect circle of dead stuff, or, you know, around this grave, this girl who just passed away.
Which also props to the groundkeeper, because if she was buried, like, a week ago, that grass covered really well.
Yeah.
So we find out that Angela Mason died recently in a car crash.
Yep.
So they go see her father, who happens to be a professor at the college.
Mm-hmm.
Which, go Angela, you definitely got a free ride there.
Yeah, really. Lucky.
Who doesn't really understand, but he is a professor of, like, ancient Greek mythology.
Mm-hmm.
We find out that Angela had a boyfriend, and she also had a roommate.
And her boyfriend broke up with her. Or cheated on her.
She broke up with the... Yeah, I would say she,
he
I think...
cheated on her.
Yeah, she caught him cheating on her. Which is funny, because I guess the grief was eating at him, because the last thing he saw was her being super pissed that he cheated on her.
Yeah.
So then he started to watch videos of her. And then he slits his throat. Gets his throat slit.
Yeah, I was going to say, he didn't do it.
Well, we don't know. Because I think he is a little crazy. They visit Lindsay, who happens to be Angela's roommate.
Hey, break into her house. They break into the house. Or Dean breaks into the house.
Okay, also, they've broken into how many places with, like, pocket knives and, like, pickpocket tools? Dean's in there with a fucking credit card. When does that ever work?
Never.
And it's still like, you are a sorority girl. Did you not watch Ted Bundy? Like, you make sure that shit is locked.
Clearly not.
He broke out with a credit card. So Dean breaks in with a credit card, circa Chase Bank 2006, and then runs into her, lies, and says that she's his cousin. She's Angela's cousin, not Lindsay's cousin. I feel like Lindsay would know that's her cousin.
I don't know. She seemed a little, you know.
She finally bought it, too. She's like, oh, yeah, you must. Lindsay, Angela would definitely have a cousin who breaks into the house. And I love the fact that he's like, how else would I have a key to your place? And he's just holding up his car keys.
Yeah, because it could be any key for anything.
Yeah.
Dumb girl.
And that's when Dean finds out that not only has she broken up over Angela's death, but Angela's boyfriend, Matt, apparently slit his own throat the previous night.
Yeah, bye, Matt.
No. But then he also apparently thought he saw Angela everywhere.
Yeah, and he was, whenever that happened, he was sitting there watching videos of her.
And he saw the reflection in the TV.
Yeah.
Of Angela.
Mm-hmm.
Which, props, they apparently buried her like a hippie. She was in that, like, flowy,
yeah, that, like white
peasant
dress,
girl dress.
Yeah.
While being in the house while pretending to be Angela's cousin after breaking it with a credit card, Dean steals Angela's diary.
I mean, why not?
Because why not steal a girl's diary? Props to him, though, for knowing where to look. Like, he had an idea of where she would have kept it. I mean, he's been with enough girls. I'm sure he knows where girls keep their diaries. But
do you think he looks at the girls' diaries to see if they wrote anything about him in it?
And they're probably like, this guy, Dean, is so hot, but such a tool. And he's like, yeah, that's me.
I made the book.
That's the yeah. The book. The bingo book. And we find out that Angela had a confidant, a BFF.
Yeah, who will forever be stuck in the friend zone.
Yes, Neil.
Neil.
Neil stuck in the friend zone,
yeah,
when she was alive.
Yes, true.
Apparently, to bed a girl who's friend zoned you, she just has to die and you have to bring her back to life.
That was so gross. So gross.
That was just.
Okay, like, she was dead, dude. Like, she was in the ground. I know she's still dead, but, like,
there's nothing working.
It's still so gross.
Here's the age-old question. If it's a zombie, is it necrophilia?
Oh, I don't even want to know. It's just so gross.
It's disgusting. But technically, it's not a dead, I mean, it is a dead body, but it's a reanimated corpse, so.
Is she warm, then? I don't know.
No, because she's all pale and definitely dead when you see her in comparison to Neil later on.
So gross.
So, obviously, Sam and Dean decide to pay Neil a visit.
Hey, Neil.
That's when they find out that Matt was having an affair when Angela found out on the night of her death. So they're like, okay, so definitely vengeful spirit. This has vengeful spirit written all over it. So they go to her coffin, which, again, props to them. They somehow dig the most perfect rectangle with space to climb in next to the coffin.
Every time.
It's impressive. So they open the coffin to find nothing. Nothing. Except for a ripped up lid to the coffin, which I couldn't tell if, like, she had scratched it, because how else did she go out? Because obviously the ground was perfect when they showed up and it was dead. Again, plot holes. I have questions.
Yeah, like, would he do the ritual and then, like, she tried to get, I don't even know.
Because my
That's
first thought
question.
Was, like, maybe he drew the symbols on the lid of the coffin and then, like, recovered it and, like, she scratched it open, or did, like, he break in, cut the fabric, do it, shut it, and then she was buried. Because for a car accident, she was thought to be in pretty good condition, so obviously they could have had an open coffin.
Yeah. She looked perfectly fine, like nothing happened to her.
Like, I think her neck just snapped and they called it a day.
Wouldn't she be wobbly head then when she was walking around?
I don't know. Like I said, I got questions on this episode, but I liked it. So obviously because it was Greek symbols, Dean immediately loses his fucking cool and suspects the dad.
Oh my god, he goes after the poor man.
And Sam is just like, dude, you need to calm down. Get out. He takes it out on the dad. Partially, I think, because he sees a father who would bring back his son. Or, like, obviously in his case, he's transposing his feelings for his father onto the father of Angela.
Right.
And just lays into him.
Well, yeah, he's like, she's not even your daughter. She's not even, you know.
You don't even know what you brought back. She's gonna kill everybody. She's already committed murder. Like, what's dead should stay dead.
Yeah. Oh, you felt it on that one.
And obviously Dr. Mason's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm gonna call the police. Get the fuck out of my house.
And then Sam's like, do you see all the healthy living plants around here, Dean? Maybe we should go.
Obviously, we didn't see Angela's mother, so we assumed that the mother's dead. So, like, he's taking care of those plants himself.
Yeah, props to him, because I wouldn't do that.
So now we're back to kind of square one. That's when Dean goes, maybe Neil isn't all that he seems, because Neil also happens to be the TA to Dr. Mason.
Yeah, so he has access to all his books and everything.
All the ancient Greek mythology and symbolism.
Neil.
So maybe this unrequited love caused him to bring her back from the dead. So they go to Neil's house to confront him. No one's home, but they find out that obviously the plants are dead.
Yeah.
And they find what they call a zombie den and a place where she can get out because she's not dumb.
What constituted the zombie den? Like, just because she was there?
I guess.
Like, what do normal zombies have, you know, in their bedroom?
Just stick them. Like, also, he stuck her in the basement with, like, a cot.
Yeah. Well, you can't have anybody see your reanimated girlfriend.
Who just recently died. I feel like it's too soon.
Feels a little longer, maybe.
And probably not on campus. So, Dean realizes, you know, it takes two to tango. She's probably going to go after the second person involved. And Lindsay seemed super broken up about Matt's death.
Oh, yeah.
Cut to Lindsay and Angela's apartment. Lindsay sees Angela. Angela tries to kill her with a big old pair of shears. Only to impale herself, which I thought when she pulled those scissors out, what was attached was a little gross. That was a little overkill.
Yeah.
Dean and Sam end up getting in after kind of going over notes of how to kill a zombie. Because there's nothing really set in stone, you know. Burn the bones, stake them into the coffin, just light them on fire. Silver, they came up with silver, so they decided they were going to try and shoot her with some silver bullets. That just kind of pissed her off.
Doesn't that usually happen when it's like, when they're doing like trial by error?
They end up pissing off the spirit.
They're like, oh crap, well that didn't work, but I made it mad.
Yeah, now it's either going to come after me or it's gone.
But then it'll come back.
So now they got to go back. So after Neil, Neil finds, they go to Neil, and Neil denies her ever being there, although they see the dead plants. And Dean kind of pulls him aside and is like, hey, don't fucking make her mad.
Yeah, don't piss that bitch off.
So they try to do a little switcheroo and trick her into going to the cemetery. By saying that they found a ritual that will definitely kill her. And they leave to go set up the ritual, as it were. After they leave, Angela comes out, and she and Neil kind of talk for a while. He kind of plays it cool, tries to get to his car. She gets super pissed and kills him.
Yeah, she's like, are you leaving me, Neil?
Don't you leave me. Snaps his neck.
Then Neil did.
Yeah. So then she goes to the cemetery. At the cemetery, Sam even questions. He's like, do you really even think this is going to work?
Probably not, but you know, whatever.
Obviously, a fight ensues, and Dean ends up staking her inside the coffin.
Yes!
Which I thought was interesting, because it ties back to the episode right before this about the lure of vampires, and they're like, maybe this is where vampires got started. Because they started staking them into the coffin.
Yeah.
So, obviously, they hopefully rebury her. We never actually see that.
What if they just left her? Like, the coffin open and everything, just stake there in the ground.
And it's the first time that Dean actually looks at his mom's gravestone.
Yeah.
And then obviously they leave, and Dean pulls the car over and apologizes to Sam.
Aww.
Which was real sweet.
Lovey, lovey moment.
And we find out that, actually Dean is real pissed at his dad. Because he knows what they've all been thinking, which is John exchanged his life for the Colton Dean. And that's why he's struggling, because he feels responsible for John's death.
Yeah.
So sad. Dean is so not over it.
No.
But also... Nope, wrong episode. Keep going.
But, nope.
I was on a roll. I don't know where that went. Train derail.
Not going there.
Stopping it.
Okay. Are we ready for random shit?
Yes, tell me random shit.
Oh, I will tell you some random shit. If I can read my paper.
That would help.
Okay, the title Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things is a reference to the 1972 zombie movie with the same name. Dean says his name is Alan Stanwyck when he's talking to her roommate.
Yes, the cousin.
Which is a character in the 80s movie Fletch. Dean references Pet Sematary, which is a novel and film by Stephen King in which a grieving father buries his young son's body in an ancient Indian burial ground, and he comes back as a zombie. Because, I mean, ancient Indian burial grounds are the best places to do stuff.
Oh, yeah, especially the fact that, you know, there's a lot of signs that point to not doing it. In the book that are like, hey, you have to cross over this big wall into this dark, abysmal area.
I mean, it seems like a great place.
Oh, it's totally welcoming.
So Sam references George A. Romero, who is, if you don't know, the director of Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, who's very big around here. Romero created many of the modern zombie rules, including only being able to stop them with a headshot. Romero is from New York City, but he actually went to Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. The farmhouses in the cemetery that are used in the Night of the Living Dead are in Evans City, which is actually 25 miles away from where we are in Pittsburgh. And the house basement that they used in Night of the Living Dead is actually the basement of their production company that was in the South Side. I thought that was pretty interesting. I didn't know that.
That's awesome. Actually, they actually fought to save the chapel a couple of years ago. That was
oh,
used.
Really?
Yeah. So I actually did a whole newspaper article for my college newspaper on the chapel itself. But yeah, you can now actually get married in the chapel in the cemetery.
Oh, no way!
And there are some of the headstones you can find that are key to the actual film. Some of the trees are still there. I'll dig through. I have some pictures I'll share on the Twitter.
Oh, that's cool.
From when I went up there for my article.
I always like to say, they're coming for you, Barbara.
It's the only thing every time I hear Barbara.
I know, me too. Okay, so there's a Pretty in Pink reference.
Random.
When Dan. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Dan.
I should have had a beer.
At least you were like, when damn.
Yeah, when damn. When Dean is reading the journal, he says, unrequited ducky love. It's a reference to Ducky, who pines over Andy, who loves Yuppie Blaine in Pretty in Pink. There's a Beaches reference. I don't even know where they said it. But Beaches is a 1988 chick flick with Bette Midler. we didn't talk about this. When Dean walks into the hotel room and Sammy is watching the porno channel.
Oh, God. And did you hear what he's watching?
Oh, that's what I'm going to tell you. I do know what he's watching.
Oh, I lost it.
The TV announcer says, next on the Skin Channel, Casa Erotica 4, A Tale of Two Latin Beauties.
I have to ask the writers. This sense of consistency.
Yeah, and this is the first reference to Casa Erotica on the show.
I love it.
On to my random shit. This isn't anything to do with this episode. But the Impala's birthday was Saturday?
Yes.
So I have some Impala facts. Woo! Impala, how do you say it? I say it different each time I say it.
I say the Impala.
Impala?
Mm-hmm.
We'll go with that then. So I have some Impala facts because it was the Impala's birthday.
Aw, baby.
So, did you know that Supernatural has 9 Impalas?
I actually did, because only some of them are running, some of them are used for outside shots, some are only interior, and some are for the demolition.
That is exactly right.
Yeah.
Some are crashed. All in different ways. They're, you know, have different, like, front-end crash, you know, like, probably a rear taillight. Some have removable windows for whenever they're doing shot, like scenes, and removable windows and doors, excuse me, for shooting purposes. The main Impala is named Hero 1 Impala. It is equipped with a 502 big block, 550 horsepower engine, and it is the most comfortable out of all the Impalas because it has air conditioning.
Ooh, fancy.
There are 2 license plates, the KAZ2Y5, which is in the first 2 seasons, I think. Does it change this season?
That's the actual Kansas license plate.
Yes, which they said it stood for Kansas and then 2Y5 2005 whenever it started. And then they changed to the Ohio license plate, which is CNK80Q3. I did write that in season 2, episode 20.
Ah, so we're almost there. We're almost about to change.
Yeah, we're close. Eric Kripke originally had Dean driving a 65 Mustang.
I could see that, but I'm happy they went with the Impala because they didn't give him too much of a muscle car.
Kripke's neighbor actually said that it had to be a 67 Impala because you could fit a body in the trunk.
I love it.
Is why he said that. With, you want a car that when people stop next to them at lights, they lock their doors. Oh, that was so funny. And my last fact, prices for 67 Impalas skyrocketed since the show's debut. Before the premiere in 2005, a 67 Impala went for $500. ClassicCars.com, as of 2017, a fully restored 67 Impala was worth $20,000 to $50,000.
Oh, talk about skyrocketing. Jeez.
A brand new 2018 Impala was only $28,000.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like what the Impala's become. I don't like the style design on it.
Yeah, I don't like it either. But I just thought those were some interesting facts about Baby.
Aww. I like them.
Yeah, that's all I got for that.
Alright. Well, obviously, I did zombies.
Zombies.
Because zombie.
Because you had to.
Their first zombie, so Baby's first zombie.
Aww.
Yeah.
Do you get a bib for that?
You just get like a limb.
Here's a finger.
So I used a bunch of references for this. BBC.com, History.com, TheAtlantic.com, Live Science, and NPR.
How's it Live Science if it's about a zombie?
Because there's actually some scientific facts behind a zombie.
And really?
Little known fact, one of my graduating projects in college was actually, for my science course, a dissertation of sorts about the realistic expectations of a zombie virus.
Really?
Yes.
I'm intrigued.
And I actually slightly proved it, more so in the fact that it's a virus, and less of a you're gonna rise from your grave situation.
Oh, okay.
Because there's actually some animals right now that are experiencing a zombie-like state with, like, raccoons that can actually transfer them, and then if it finds a way to, like, mutate, it can transfer from an animal to a human. It was a whole thing. But I digress. Alright, so, zombies. We live in the city of zombies. We have zombie walks. We have Night of Living Dead viewings. But zombies actually first appeared in English around 1810 by historian Robert Southey in his book History of Brazil. Now, when you talk about zombies, there are two different types. There's the reawakened corpse with an insatiable appetite for brains and flesh. Or there is the someone bitten by a zombie and infected with the zombie virus. Origins can date back to ancient Greeks having a fear of the undead. Archaeologists have actually found graves with skeletons pinned down by rocks in ancient Greece. And then there is also voodoo.
Oh.
Or voodoo or voodoon, which is a religion based in West Africa and practiced in Haiti, Brazil, the American South, and the Caribbean. Zombies showed up in Haiti in 17th and 18th century when slaves were brought in to work on sugar plantations. And people believe that zombies were actually mirrored the inhumanity suffered by the slaves from 1625 to 1800, because slaves believed that when they died, they'd be returned to La Guinée, which is Africa, where they'd be free. But if a slave committed suicide, they wouldn't be able to return and instead be condemned to be stuck in the plantations for eternity as an undead slave.
Oh, crap.
Or a soulless zombie.
That's like how we say at work, if I die, I'm going to push you out into the street so you don't get stuck there.
Yes. Haiti, actually, during that time frame, was also originally called Saint-Domingue, but was renamed in 1804 after a long revolutionary war, which then it became Haiti. Now, in voodoo religion, zombies are revived by a voodoo practitioner called a bokor. And a bokor uses a mix of herbs, shells, animal bones, and parts to grind down into what is called a zombie powder, which is then ingested by the person. And it contains tetrodotoxins, which is a deadly neurotoxin.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound like something fun that I would want to eat.
So what it does is it actually affects the brain and turns that person into a soulless zombie, like a mindless zombie.
So who is eating that?
Some people would pay these bokors to do to a person that they hated.
Oh, okay, I see.
Or sometimes they would just do to them. It could be anybody, really. So now the word zombie actually comes from Mtsogo language of Gabon, and it comes from Nzumbi, meaning corpse, but it could also be Nzambi, meaning spirit of a dead person in the Congo language. Flip my paper over. I had a lot on this. The first real Western introduction of the zombie came in a film form in 1932, with the movie White Zombie, around the same time as other monster movies came out, such as Dracula and Frankenstein. But zombies have appeared in literature as far back as 1697, but then they were more described as ghosts and not cannibals.
Okay.
At that time, a zombie was, again, just a mindless person that would either consistently do what they've always done or do whatever they were told. In the movie White Zombie, a person whose brains are essentially fried or zapped is controlled by a master. So even in that first Western introduction, they weren't cannibals or super violent. They actually bed a master. There was a man by the name of William Seabrook, who is a writer, occultist, journalist, and alcoholic.
I like how that's just tacked on the end there. He was all these things. Oh, by the way, he was a drunk.
He visited Haiti in 1927 and actually wrote a book called The Magic Island. He attended voodoo ceremonies and actually witnessed zombies who worked the fields at night. The zombie that we kind of see in this, which was the introduction of the cannibalistic side of zombies, didn't come about until 1968 in George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead. And as you stated, George A. Romero wasn't actually from Pittsburgh, but he did attend CMU in Pittsburgh, PA. He also then went on to direct Dawn of the Dead in 1978 and Day of the Dead in 1985. And he was actually the person who brought about the idea of zombies as violent creatures, that we aim to kill them by shooting them in the head, that they lust for human flesh and brains, and obviously in Night of the Living Dead, they were reanimated by the radiation of a fallen satellite. And that was filmed near Evan City, near Pittsburgh. However, zombies are actually mentioned, not by name, in the Bible themselves.
Really?
In the book of Ezekiel, Ezekiel is in a boneyard, and they actually begin to reanimate the bones themselves. And it's quoted as, yet there was no breath in them.
Interesting.
In the book of Isaiah, it's quoted as saying, thy dead men shall live, together with my dead body shall they rise. Awake and sing, ye that dwell in dust. For the day is as the dew of herbs, and the earth shall cast out the dead. It's so much a thing now that the CDC actually has a section of their website called Zombie Preparedness.
Really?
Which you can actually look up. It is actually a tab on the CDC site, and it is somewhat serious. But
it has its own tab?
Yes.
Sorry, there's no tab.
And it's actually to help prepare for disasters.
Okay.
So they're using the idea of a zombie apocalypse, I guess, is to prepare you in case some kind of a disaster does hit, not necessarily a zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
Now, after 1968, the world exploded with zombies, so much so that in pop culture today, we have movies and video games, books, and zombies, obviously, everywhere, including the CDC, some of which include Shaun of the Dead, Zombieland, iZombie, which is both a television show and graphic novel, World War Z, Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, The Walking Dead, Anne and the Apocalypse, Left 4 Dead video game, Call of Duty Zombies has its own branch, and Resident Evil from Capcom.
Even Disney got in on the zombies.
They did.
They're dancing, singing zombies. Mm-hmm. They were segregated from the school of Seabrook.
They Disney-fied zombies, which was impressive.
Yeah, two times. There's
Scooby-Doo.
Two
Scooby-Doo even has Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island.
Uh-huh.
So you can find zombies anywhere. Now, I bet you're wondering, what are some characteristics of zombies?
Do tell.
Alright, so if you wonder if your friend, family member, or cousin is a zombie...
Oh, here's your checklist.
Here is your checklist.
Let's write it down, kids.
They are mobile.
Okay, check.
They are unemotional.
Check, check.
Decaying.
Oh, okay, maybe not that one.
Clumsy.
Yeah?
I mean, I guess if you're dead and you're mobile, you're not exactly the prime candidate for leading a yoga class.
You're not going to do that downward dog?
Nope. Generally violent. Vulnerable to destruction of the brain.
Oh, okay.
Contagious.
You got the COVID.
Persistent.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Unaffected by injuries.
Clearly, Aubrey's not a zombie.
which we see, obviously, in, like, especially The Walking Dead, when you see zombies lose legs and they're still crawling towards somebody. They're persistent in that they are also constantly hungry, and if they see something they want to eat, they will try to go after it no matter what, if that means hitting themselves against a fence for all eternity because they can't get past it.
Okie dokie.
Rob Zombie even used zombies in his name and actually used that as the laying out for a song that he released called Living Dead Girl.
I like that song.
Me too. The music video is pretty good too. So you can pretty much find zombies at this point everywhere, which again was only in the voodoo religion really up until we westernized it. And George Romero kind of gave birth to the idea of the zombie.
He birthed a zombie.
He birthed a zombie, and then my dog would not be named Tallahassee.
Well, that was it. I like learning about things like that.
I knew that the idea of the zombie stemmed from the voodoo religion, which was brought up. I just didn't realize that the original idea of the zombie was basically transposed for the inhumane treatment of slaves, and that's where it originated.
Yeah.
Which gives it a whole different feeling when you stop to think about it.
Oh, totally. It's not like just some stupid brain-dead zombie anymore.
Trying to eat somebody. No, it actually had meaning. And
yeah.
It was their way of coping. And also, in theory, kind of like a wives' tale to keep you motivated, to keep doing what you're doing, hoping one day you're going to be free.
Right.
And not turned into a zombie. And then you have these bokors who give you a tetrotoxin. Essentially poisoning you and making you a brain-dead zombie who listens to somebody.
I don't think at that point I would take anything from anybody.
Generally, if some voodoo priest is giving me a powder, I'm probably like, I'm good.
I don't think I'd be like, oh yeah, please let me take that. No, I'm good.
I just inhale this powder. I feel like I've been told this is a no-no.
Yeah, and I'd be like, who are you talking to? Like,
I feel like in Pitch Perfect, where Fat Amy's like, should I do that? Nah, better not.
No.
I'm good. I'm gonna pass on that one today.
So do we want to talk about what we're gonna do for next time?
Yes.
Because it's so exciting.
Yes.
So Liz and I are gonna have a Netflix party. And instead of using the chat function in the Netflix party, we're gonna record our reactions. Because we say... Well, we write down some funny shit. So just imagine how it would be if we did it live.
You get to hear our beautiful voices in real time with the episode.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be edited down so you don't. There's not, like, tons of silence between our...
Yeah, you're not going to listen to the whole 49-minute...
Yeah, we'll cut it down to just our witty banter. But I think it's going to be... I think it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be fun. I'm excited to try it.
We're kind of, even though we've gone through an entire first season, we're still kind of working out the kinks and trying to, like, get you guys interested and get you guys talking to us and us talking to you and try a bunch of different stuff because we don't want to keep doing the same thing over and over again because we know you guys don't want to hear us do the same thing over and over again.
No, we like to spice it up.
You gotta keep it spicy.
Oh, yeah. I just had Spice Girls in my head.
Spice up your life!
Yeah, exactly! That's exactly what it was.
I used to know that whole dance.
Oh, really?
I watched a lot of Spice World back in the day.
Okay.
My friends and I were the Spice Girls.
So our next episode, we're going to do the watch party for that one?
Yes.
Okay, so that's episode 5, Simon Said.
Which is also, I think, going to be a really fun one because we find out a little bit more about Sam.
Yep.
And things get crazy.
Crazy. So then if this one goes well, we could add people into the next one probably.
Yeah.
Even if it's just, if it's everybody else over the chat, we can read what they're saying.
True. We can also just have, like, a Zoom party.
Yeah, oh, Zoom party.
Zoom party.
Well, then I will have to post that so we can get ahead of it.
Yes.
So we can drum up some excitement for it.
Yes. Get excited. Let's get it started. Just edit that out. Don't have me sing hi.
I don't know how to edit on this thing yet, so we'll see. We'll see how it goes. People could be getting 72 minutes of us just doing random shit.
I'm real sorry about that, but you know what? Balls to the wall, let's do it!
I mean, that isn't our name,
yes. So. I hope everyone else is enjoying this as much as we are. Not only the series, but also us, because obviously we know you enjoy the series, let's be honest.
And clearly we enjoy us, so.
Yes! One of these days I'm going to pull out a Supernatural workout, too, and try it.
A what?
You've never seen these?
No?
Yeah, so let me see if I can. I saved it. I'll share it too, and we can maybe find a funny episode. I already promised my brother we'd bring him in on the Trickster episode.
A Supernatural workout?
Yeah. So there's a few of them. This is probably my favorite. Every time you hear a classic rock song, 20 crunches.
Oh my god.
Here's okay. One of my favorites.
Oh, so you do this while you're watching the episode?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so anytime Sam magically has Wi-Fi, I'm not going to tell you. I'll just tell you some of the things that they make you look for.
The middle of freaking nowhere.
Every time someone scoffs. Every time there's a meaningful stare.
Oh, okay.
Every time Dean says Sammy. every time Sam or Dean cry. And then obviously at the bottom you get hit with it every time then, now, or the Road So Far montage comes on.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, you can totally get going if you watch like a bunch of episodes. Yeah. Every time you hear or see the Impala.
Oh, you only have to see every time you hear it.
Every time Dean says, son of a bitch. every time Bobby says, idiot, or swears.
Okay.
Every time Sam or Dean uses fake ID. Every time Dean, see, now you got
see?
Me.
Ah!
Well, because it says every time Dean and or Cass say or do something that makes you want to flail.
It's not just makes you want to flail?
Yes.
Like.
Apparently, if I go down, this group creates a bunch of different, like, superhero workouts. This person made a Supernatural workout called Bring Me Some Pie. but yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, this one's probably my favorite.
Bring me some pie.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But there's a few of them, but I have one of my favorites. I'll share it.
That's pretty awesome.
That way we can have a fit Supernatural fam.
Oh, yeah. Yo, Supernatural fit fam. Balls fit fam.
I found some t-shirts kind of like my running shirt. So I have a running shirt that says, run like Dean just saw you crash the Impala. this one says, weekends are for wine and the Winchesters.
Oh, nice.
The other one says, I'm only single because I can't date a Winchester.
Oh, I need that.
I feel like I need the weekends are for wine and the Winchesters.
Yeah.
Oh, those are great. I'm going to find these and get them. Oh, what? Squat like Sam and Dean Winchester are your spotters.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. My ideal weight is Jensen Ackles on top of me. We're derailing very fast.
Oh, it's so true, though.
Oh, my God. Oh, this is great. a little bit of Gabriel in my life, a little bit of Castiel by my side, a little bit of Dean is what I see, a little bit of Sam is what I need, a little bit of Crowley straight from hell, a little bit of Lucifer here as well, a little bit of Bobby to keep us right as we drive baby all through the night. Oh my god. Okay, I gotta stop.
Somebody Mambo number 5'd it. Like,
yes, and it works so well.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's so good.
Did you see the picture I posted of, like a ton of people posted it, but Jensen standing in someone's driveway with a thing of beer?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, is he delivering? Because totally take it.
I found your next t-shirt that I'm gonna get you. It's a sweater. Oh. My Prince Charming drives a 67 and power hunts demons, ghosts, and monsters, wears a leather jacket, and loves pie.
Yes! Oh my god, I would love you forever.
Oh man. These are wonderful. So obviously if you Google Supernatural t-shirts, you can find some wonderful, wonderful stuff. I get all my nerdy running stuff from a very specific site.
We could be here all day with this.
Oh, it's great. I got mine... my Run Like Dean Just Saw You Crash the Impala shirt from Activate Apparel. And they have a bunch of other ones, too. Like, I love exorcising.
That's exorcising. Exorcising.
Run Like the Winchesters Are in Front of You and Crowley Is Behind You.
Well, I don't know. I think I'd want to talk to Crowley.
Later on. Early on, I think I'd run from Crowley.
Yeah, like, I'm not making any deals there, but...
No, especially if I'm stuck at a crossroads going through it.
Just a chit-chat.
But yeah, if you run like hellhounds are after you...
one I would definitely be afraid of.
Obviously, if you were in the Supernatural fam and you were looking for that nerdy apparel, Google it. Activate Apparel's got some good stuff. I've had the same running shirt for like 3 years, and it hasn't faded yet.
If you guys know of any, apparel... I love nerdy shirts... So if you guys have any of your favorites, let us know.
Yes, because I'm always looking to add. Because I just have the three running shirts. I have that, a Star Trek, and Captain America.
Oh, nice. I have a bunch of random t-shirts that say random shit.
I'm actually wearing my On Your Left Captain America shirt.
Oh, nice. I have a shirt that says Sasshole on it.
Oh, I love that shirt.
I have a shirt that says I Love Whole Foods and it's got a donut. just random stuff.
Just fun shirts. Sure, yeah. We always love a good laugh. We need some entertainment. And you know what? Live out loud.
Yes. LOLOLOLOL.
Rafflecopter.
Okay, well, thank you, friends, for listening to another episode.
And hopefully next time we'll have something fun and new to share.
Yes. It's going to be different. We'll see how it goes.
Let's do it. Until next time, Supernatural fam.
Bye.
You've been listening to Balls, a Supernatural podcast with Lizzie and Missy. If you want more, follow on Twitter and Instagram at SBNBallsPod or email SBNBallsPod@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe and follow Balls on your favorite streaming service.